Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you sun in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. May is membership month here at Heritage Radio, and it is of the utmost importance for members and listeners to help us out and help us continue with bringing you all the information and entertainment that we do on a weekly basis. And also, you know, like, Jack's skateboard broke a wheel. Like, we need people to donate so we can get him back on his wheels, you know.
How am I going to get to work?
How's he going to get to work?
How am I going to do the show?
I have no idea how to run the board or the computer. I'm so, like, I can't even say technology. I can't do it. We need Jack.
We're a mess.
We are a mess. But with your support, we'll clean up our act and continue to rock it out. So, speaking of rocking it out, I've got one of the most rock star bartenders in New York City, Charles Hardwick. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Damon. It's a pleasure to be here. You and I guess, have known each other for, about 3 years?
Three, four years. But yeah. We haven't actually gotten a chance to sit down and talk like at length. It's usually like passing at an event or at a bar, and there's usually, you know, all the distractions that come along with that. So it's nice to be able to have you in the studio today and talk shop.
Totally. I'm excited.
Yeah. So for those people who don't know you, which, you know, for the three people who don't know who you are, why don't you give us a little background on your bartending experience in New York City and just in general, like your history?
Cool. I'm one of those rare birds in this industry and in this city, in a sense that I am actually from New York.
What?
Was born and raised here. Someone that I work with, I'm working with right now, actually, was from New Orleans, very glib gentleman. Was like, wait a minute, you're one of those mythical creatures that actually is from New York and lives and works here? And yeah, that's true. I mean, I grew up here sort of a child of, I'm a little bit older than some people too. I'm basically a child of the 70s, late 70s, early 80s. And I started working in the industry in, you know, kind of a real just simple, cool place called Acme Bar and Grill, which was at the time just a kind of a Southern barbecue joint, you know what I mean? And like, we had a big lemonade machine, and we made Lynchburg lemonade with Jack Daniels and wings, and we had like oyster happy hour and all that stuff. It was definitely not a cocktail joint. The guy who trained me there was this guy named Rudy, who was like really cool, laid back guy, looked like Michael Jordan. Strangely, Acme is now, it's kind of emblematic of the changes in the city, because Acme Bar and Grill is now this very trendy restaurant that kept the name and the location. I mean, even the signage, and it's now this really super hot, trendy, you know, fashion destination kind of restaurant. So that was my first restaurant job, bartending job. And, you know, then I kind of evolved into a couple of other places that were somewhat similar. And eventually wound up stumbling into the Odeon in Tribeca, which is a kind of an iconic place.
Yeah. Did you work with Toby?
It was I'm not that old, dude. Jeez, really?
Sorry, Toby Giacchini.
sorry about that, dude. Everyone knows you're old. Toby Giacchini, the inventor of the sort of reconstructed Cosmopolitan. But no, it was a few years after that. But it's still a really cool place and a great crew there. And then from there, wound up at Pravda, which was signature for me because I wound up working with the guys from Employees Only before they even ever thought of Employees Only. Jay Cosmos and Dushan Zarich. And that's where the whole cocktail bug bit. and I sort of, you know, got into, you know, really crafting cocktails and working with fresh ingredients and stuff like that. From there, it went into a couple of other places that aren't really worth mentioning. Then opened up my own bar called Blue Owl and was sort of a beverage director partner there. And left there to sort of do consulting and stuff like that. So since then, I've been working on a lot of brands. I've worked at a couple of different bars, the most noteworthy one probably being the Double Seven in the Meatpacking District. And then I worked at the Windsor for a while. But it's been a lot of consulting and brand work up until recently. And I'm psyched to get back behind the stick at this place I'm working at now called Bettany.
Cool.
Whew.
There we go. Nice. You did it.
Yeah.
So you, like, going a little bit back, you started bartending in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And did you just like jump right into bartending, or did you kind of like work your way into that position? Is that a question that we should ask?
I thought you said there were no gotcha questions here. I did actually start out.
I guess what I really wanted to ask is that something that you saw yourself doing, like as something that you were going to be passionate about?
No. But I sort of mean that in the best sense of the word, because I was a busboy, and you know, in the long run, it turned out to be good that I did that. But I just needed money. Like, I think a lot of us, when we first started, you know, bartending was kind of like, we needed money, or it was a matter of convenience, or
the dynamics changed so much from then to now, because now people are like, oh shit, I want to quit my like Wall Street job to become a distiller, or a mixologist, or you know, whatever.
Totally. Like, people are saying, I dreamed of being a bartender. And I'm like floored by that, you know, like in this country.
Like, really, are you fucking crazy?
Yeah, what's the matter with you? But, you know, I started off as a busboy, and then I quickly at this one place became a food expediter. And very quickly, I was like looking at the bartender going, this guy or girl has the best job in the entire restaurant. Like, they just seem to be just a person who's, you know, yeah, they're dispensing drinks, but they're, you know, they're really in control of their environment and the environment. That their working environment, and that really appealed to me, you know. And I also noticed that guests treated the bartender with much more respect, and there was a different dynamic there. And it really, to me, just made a lot of sense for me to do that. But I also just kind of fell into it, because at Acme, I didn't, you know, I had a girlfriend at the time who told me to. She was like, just make it up on your resume, you know. Just so I put some places on there that closed. And I walked into Acme, and just stroke of luck, they were like, yeah, we see you behind the bar. And I was like, really? I don't know how to make drinks at all. And they were like, yeah, don't worry about that. Like, well, you know, like, so I learned, you know, like, Rudy showed me, like, counting, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is a shot. And then I learned, you know, okay, well, I didn't call them modifiers or base spirits then. It was just like, you know, put them into the drink, and they interact this way, and you need a little citrus, and it'll taste better.
Yeah. And plus, at that time, the craft of making cocktails wasn't really like present. It was like, all right, I want something that's like in a martini glass, and it's a certain color, and it's fruity, and like it's going to get me drunk.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was like that story about the Dick Bratzel and the espresso martini or whatever. It was like a drink that'll
the original
wake me up.
Vodka Red Bull.
And it was like, I want to drink some models like that. I want to drink that'll wake me up and fuck me up. You know, it was like that. And, just people, you know, didn't really care. Like, you know what, as long as the drink was strong, mm-hmm. and like was drinkable, you know, for the most part, you know,
make it strong, bro.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, but it was around the same time Dale was doing some stuff at the Rainbow Room, mm-hmm. but that was like this certain well-heeled crowd, you know. It wasn't really at all part of the cultural landscape like it is today, you know, like in a column in Esquire. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know. So it was, yeah, it was a very, very, very different time. But also it was different for food too.
Yeah.
You know, and the two go hand in hand. Now it's just light years away.
Yeah, it's amazing how things change that quickly. Like, as far as, like, the spectrum of history, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, it's a result of, you know, at least at first, a handful of people just saying, why are we doing this way again?
Yeah, why does everything suck right now?
Yeah, like, I mean, really? We're using, like, sour mixed, like, at Acme, Lemon X in a big jug. Like, that was a margarita. Some crappy tequila that was a mixto, mm-hmm. triple sec, you know, Lemon X from a gun, the soda gun, that is, and some Roses lime juice and some, you know, kosher salt if they wanted it.
Yeah.
Shake it up. Use this, you know, the ice that you shook it up with.
None of this. It's basically tossing
pouring
it
over fresh ice and double, you know, fine straining. What the hell?
No. They're like, if you even used a Hawthorne strainer, a lot of it was like 10 on 10, just broken off.
So ever since like the egg.
Yeah, cracking the egg, totally. Yeah, it's amazing. And like, especially like you mentioned Dale, it's like Dale and Jill DeGroff came on the show last year, and they're freaking lovely people. And it's amazing for.
Lovely, yeah.
Someone like to be so like psyched about it and like still so pleasant and humble.
He could just easily be like, I've been out with Dale, you know, in London. We actually went to London with a brand sponsored thing. And, I didn't know him at the time. We won at this croquet competition, which is another strange story in and of itself. So we go to London together, and I expected, okay, we do the tournament together. Maybe we go out for drinks one night. Dale called me every morning to like see what I was doing that day and to tell me what he was doing and like make sure that I was not left out of his plans.
It's amazing. Amazing dude.
And he introduced me to every person he came into contact with when we were together in London, which were some big time people. He made sure that they knew who I was. Just a lovely, committed, generous, and like humble guy, like a true like mentor kind of personality.
And he's seen like the whole shift, you know.
Yeah.
Big like Catherine's shift. like he's worked the long shift.
Yes, he has. He's put his time in as much as anyone, and you know, as I said, been such a big part of this resurgent of this renaissance in the industry. He's been someone I could go to for advice. And I love the fact that Dale is not like, you know, one of those people who everything has to be built around spirits and cocktails. You know what I mean? Like, you know, he's great about
being a bartender
and just life. You know, stuff.
Yeah, totally.
Too. You know what I mean? Like he sees everything. Like, you know, some, you know, many of the other people, like, you know, Gary Regan or Dave Wondrich or whatever, in this broader context of like, you know, we're dealing with people.
That, you know, like, absolutely. And it's also taken to like, you know, Charles H. Baker Jr., you know, like his whole thing, you know, the Gentleman's Companion, it was all about traveling the world, having good food, having good drinks with good people. Like he was a huge, like, you know, in our circle, we think of him as, you know, like a guy who made some great drinks, but he was an amazing, very funny also, and very witty journalist.
Yeah.
And you know, when you read The Gentleman's Companion, it's like he's talking, it's not just about drinks and food. It's like about life in general, like you were saying.
Exactly. And Dale tells a great story. Gary tells a great story. To me, the best bartenders, I want to be at their bar because of them, you know. And the drinks, the cocktails, those are an accessory to, you know, the experience. Mm-hmm. You know, there are some people that I know of and whose bars I've been to who can make like a perfect, you know, perfectly crafted cocktail, but it's boring at
that
bar. Like,
and also like maybe that person's just a total asshole. You know, I don't care how good of a drink you make me. It's like, if you're not a good bartender, if you're not tending to the bar and to the people,
yeah.
And it's really about being a host, you know,
totally.
Then that drink is going to automatically taste less delicious to
you. Yeah, you'll walk out of there like, what was, you know, like you just, it doesn't leave a, you know, a mark on you. And, you know, I mean, it doesn't mean you have to be some like, hi, how you doing? You know, some game show host or Hokey. Something like that. Yeah, and this is cornball. You know, I see some bartenders these days too. Also, they have what I call like the kind of bartender smile. Like they've been doing that for so many years. They look like, you know, their faces, you can't see it on the radio, obviously, but their face is like frozen in this mask of like fake hospitality.
Right.
And it's like, and that's kind of off-putting too. Like, I'd rather somebody be like kind of slightly surly, you know, but like witty in a witty way.
Yeah.
And be also kind of, you know, still being true to themselves, you know, and caring about what they do, but are kind of like, yeah, you know, like a French waiter or something like that, you know,
right,
kind of
right.
Like, all right, this guy's he can be a little bit like salty, but you know, I kind of like that.
Yeah. It's admirable and it's truth.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's genuine, sincerity. That's kind of like, you know, if you came to my house, I'm going to treat you the same way.
Right.
It's like, I'm going to talk shit to you a little bit, and make you kind of feel a little uncomfortable.
Chops, but in keep you on your toes.
Yeah, totally, exactly. Because it's also like the responsibility of a customer to be a good customer.
Yeah.
As much as it is to be a good host as a bartender. So it's a give and take. And it's like, we should be hanging out at the bar and at the restaurant like we are hanging out at a fucking cookout.
Yeah, and there are rules of engagement. You know, I mean, sort of unspoken rules of engagement.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, let's talk about some of our cocktails.
Okay. All
right. Cool. We'll be right back with Charles Hardwick.
You're listening to brand new Herbert Spliffington on Heritage Radio Network.
That was some pretty gnarly music, Jack.
Thanks, man.
Who was that?
That's Herbert Spliffington from an EP that I'm actually putting out this week on Friday.
Oh, nice. I wasn't even trying to plug that. I was just really into it.
Nice. There you go. Organic plugs. Fullserviceparty.com.
Nice. All right. We've been chatting with Charles Hardwick, talking about coming into the bar world as bartender, you know, 20 years ago. I'm sorry. I don't know if you wanted me to throw that up. Ouch.
I'm also a vampire, so it doesn't matter.
But talking about how like there's been a huge shift in the way that bars and restaurants have changed and how hospitality has changed. And, you know, right before the break, we were talking about what it takes to be a good host and like just the responsibility of being a good host and being a good customer. And that's not something that's easily learned, you know. And you said that there are a lot of people with that fake hospitality. So you like on that note, I'm going to talk about a little bit about doing brand work, because you were repping for some brands before, and I feel like a lot of times like it's really hard to find that person. It's been difficult for me, like meeting people when they work for brands that are actually genuine,
yeah,
and like are like behind their brand, and it's not just like a numbers game and a sales job for them.
Yeah,
can you tell us a little bit about that world and like how it fits in with like bartending and back and forth?
Yeah.
It's not a gotcha moment.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, like you, before I entered the payroll world of bartending, like you, I did, you know, a lot of consulting work, you know, which was great and really rewarding. But it's like one, you know, sort of facet of working on brands. And once I, you know, started working on a brand and a big one at that, you know, I was exposed to this whole other reality of, you know, like you said, numbers and people, you know, trying to accomplish things that, you know, I don't know, just it was as though they really had lost touch with, you know, and this ties in with what we were saying before the break, with the human element and the fact that we're dealing with actual people out there. Yeah. It's not like consumers are these, you know, vehicles for, you know, solely for your brand to just accomplish X, Y, and Z. And you can accomplish much more if you really engage the actual people kind of on a human level in a way that's not like so obviously exploitative in a way. You know what I mean? So, you know, it benefited me to have been a bartender and to understand the reality of not only interacting with guests / consumers, but also with bartenders. So I would never approach a bar, and you know, I sort of gotten yelled at for this a lot, because I never wanted to go into a bar and be like, hi, I work for X brand. Da, 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 da. Where's the bar manager? Who makes the decisions around here? I'd go in and I'd like have a drink. Usually wouldn't finish it, but I'd have a drink and spend a little bit of money and look at the menu and get a feel for what kind of place is this? You know, what kind of bartenders do they have here? Oh, okay, well, you know, what's the food like? And so on and so forth. And then really build a relationship or attempt to build a relationship based on what, you know, I saw and the feel I got for the place. And then try to accomplish things for the brand afterwards as opposed to trying to go in and, like, buy their loyalty or, you know, accomplish something through, you know, just something that was solely superficial.
Yeah.
And, you know, behind the bar, you're trying to affect sales, too.
Exactly. And it's in the same way, too. It's not like, you know, like you were saying, like, hey, welcome to such and such bar. Like, you should try our special shot of the day.
Yeah, my name is Josh, and we have an instant.
My name is Josh, and I'll be your server.
Yeah, and this is New York, man. People are like, you know, pretty.
I don't even remember, like, most people that I work with's names. Right. I'm not going to, like, approach. Like, I hate it when waiters come up to the table and they're like, oh, I'm Melissa, and I'm going to be your server today. It's like, I have already forgot your name.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Just be good at your job.
Yeah, just be good. Like, and, you know, who wants to be the person that we've all been extremely irritated by, who asks your name or knows it somehow, overhears it, and then every time they want something, they say your name.
It's the verbal,
like,
tip.
Charles, can you get – Charles, can you – it's like, dude, like, all you have to do is tell me what you need, and, like, you don't have to, like, wear my name. And so, you know, in the capacity of a brand person, you know, you have ways in shorthand to, like, remember people, you know, important people, and find out who they are and stuff like that. But you know, I was at one of my former accounts the other night, and I'm not working on the brand anymore, but – they still, like, know me and like me and are, like, cool with me, and I say hi to them, and it was because I liked the place, you know what I mean? And it's
and benefits you did your me job the right way.
Yeah, I mean, I like to think so anyway. And there were so many things that I got done for my brand, which was not really a mixology brand, let's say. It was a vodka company. And I got things done for that brand that using those methods that people were like, how did you do that?
Yeah.
The stuff that I was proud of, you know, with flavored vodka, you know, and getting, like, certain, you know, mixology places to pick it up. But, you know, I couldn't get it on the menu, but it was still, like, a coup to get it in the actual door and get them to actually pick it up, because they were like, you know what, Charles is working on this, like, well, you know, we'll help him out or whatever. And, you know, it's – I couldn't have done that if I hadn't built the relationships that I had as being a bartender and approached brand work in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember, like, I had the pleasure of working at Linnell's a few years back, and if someone came in with a brand or working for a distributor, if someone came in and did, like you said, like the brand ambassador and, like, do the spiel and, like, hey, who's like, can I talk to your bar manager? Like, first thing, you know, when you walk in, what would happen with us? We'd be in the shop, we'd be working, you know, and someone would come in and, like, if they did that spiel, like, came in, like, hey, so I work for so-and-so, like, doing the cold call.
Yeah, and they act like you, because you work for a certain brand, that someone's supposed to fall at your feet. Here's my card.
Yeah.
That's, like,
That's sales. That's not, like, nurturing, like, the brand and what it is. But she would throw shit at them, and she would chase people out of her store.
Eat them alive, I'm sure.
And, like, we're
and knows more about their brand, probably, than they do.
Oh, yeah, totally. And that's, you know, we were talking actually before the show about, like, some of our favorite brand ambassadors, like Adam Harris from Maker's Mark.
Totally.
When he came in and introduced himself, he was walking around the store, drinking a little whiskey, talking shop, just talking about whiskey.
Yeah.
And then, like, right before he left, he was buying some stuff, threw down his Maker's Mark credit card, and then it was like, oh, shit, that's a sweet credit card. And he's like, yeah, I actually work for Maker's Mark. And it's like, that was, like, the organic way of doing it. Totally. Just like you said, like, when you walk into a bar, like, you don't, like, ask the bartender's name and, like, feel the place out and, like, do the hard sell. Like, it's like there's a really responsible way of doing that. And you wouldn't just, like, as, like, a host and as a human, you wouldn't just, like, jump down somebody's throat.
Yeah. And I mean, I would say to people all the time, you know, bartenders and, you know, beverage directors and stuff, is like, we work for you. You know, we are like, it's my job to, like, help you guys out, because you're the ones who are, like, on the ground talking to people about spirits and cocktails and things like that. And we need to be a part of that conversation. That's a big, that's what, you know, that's our goal. And the only way we can, you know, you can be, we can sort of help you to be advocates for us is to, you know, foster that kind of bond. Yeah. And that can't happen if you're going in and you're like, you know, looking around the room and not looking the person in the eye like, oh, is my brand on the back bar? Are we on the menu? And you're like, just get out.
Yeah. You know, I was having a conversation on Monday with a good bartender buddy of mine, and he's opening up his own place soon. And he was talking about how, like, kind of going back where talking about before about, you know, like the permagrin bartender, you know, yeah. And how they're, like, to me, almost untrustworthy. Yes. But like, you know, those people that can make you, like, the most amazing drink, but their intentions are, like, their attitude is kind of fake.
Yeah.
That can make that drink taste bad. And so on the flip side of that, you know, some of my favorite bartenders don't work in cocktail bars. Most of my favorite bartenders don't.
Oh, are you kidding?
Dude, you pour me a High Life and a shot of Fernet, like, I'm happy, man. If you entertain me and, like, if you're, you know, part of the party, you know, with, you know, being responsible behind the bar, not drinking.
Of course, yes.
But, yeah. But
not touching a drop.
Yeah, not even touching a drop. Yeah, no way. That doesn't happen. But you know, we were having this conversation about how when we open up the next place, how we kind of want to hire staff members from, like, waiters and bartenders from, like, chain restaurants from, like, Midtown. People who have dealt with the worst fucking people in the world under the worst conditions and have had to, like, suffer through it and, you know, high volume. These people that...
In the stupidest requests, like, can you cut my straw in half?
Yeah. That's a good one, man. But, like, yeah, I was like, dude, totally. Like, my band was playing a show in Midtown a few weeks ago at some hotel, and we decided, and I was happy to say for the longest time that I'd never eaten it at any chain restaurants in New York City. Mm-hmm. And that was true up until a few weeks ago. We were walking around. Our load-in time and sound check was at, like, 1 in the afternoon. We weren't going on stage until, like, 10.
Wow.
So we had a lot of time to kill. Mm-hmm. Went by Rudy's Guitar Shop, went to Jimmy's Corner. I don't know if you've ever been to that bar.
It's
awesome. And then we decided, like, just because we thought it'd be funny, to go to Olive Garden. And
ironic dining.
Yeah. So it's right in the middle of Times Square. And
I actually was, up until recently, was working with a girl who worked at that Olive Garden.
Nice.
And she was like, I make shit tons of money there, though.
Yeah.
I was exactly. Like, oh, you're working? She was like, this is kind of embarrassing, but I work at Olive Garden.
Yeah, that's amazing. But, like, the thing is, like, the waitress that we had was awesome. And she was so thankful for, like, a group of, like, you know,
cool
dudes, right. Like, coming in and, like, you know, drinking beers and, like, tipping well, and even though they did gratis. But, you know, they have to do that for tourists and all that stuff. But I was, like, thinking about it very long and hard. I was like, dude, we should totally hire this girl at one of our restaurants because she is... dealt with everything, and she's, like, dealt with such high volume, and she's, like, all over it. Like, usually, like, it kind of sucks, but, like, a lot of times at, like, cocktail bars and, like, fancy restaurants, like, you get a resume and it's got, like, TGI Fridays on it, and you're like, you just fucking chuck it. But, like, let's rethink that.
Right. Man. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, like, you know, and you know, I've worked with, you know, events. I was talking about this the other day with someone. I've worked events with, you know, some of these, you know, some craft bartenders, let's say, mixologists. And it starts getting, you know, it's a bigger event, let's say, and there's a bunch of people waiting for drinks, but in an orderly way. And they're like, I can't deal with this. I can't work under these conditions. This is ridiculous. And they get, like, all
Where's my half by three-quarter jigger?
Yeah, like, you have no, you know.
You don't have cold draft?
Yeah, you don't have a Uri mixing glass? What the hell? You know, like, a
cocktail. How do you do it?
Yeah, and it's like, dude, that's bartending. Seriously?
Yeah.
Like, you make it work, you know, with what's in front of you. And you certainly don't get, like, you know, up on your, like, on a pedestal and, like, you know, like, you're, you know, some brain surgeon.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm totally with you on that, man. I think, you know, the people who have dealt with things like that can be, and I work with many of them, they can be, like, some best people. And just, like, open. Like, a guy I'm working with now is, like, totally, like, to the point of being, like, annoying. He's like, okay, show me something. What are you doing? What you got going here? And I'm like, dude, how are you, like, 8 years old? But it's great in a bigger sense because he's not jaded and he's totally into, like, just, you know, I want to learn as much as I can.
That's great.
And approach this with an open mind.
Yeah, and that's great because, like, especially, like, old dogs like us, you know, it's like, you know, we can easily get stuck in our ways. But, you know, we evolved and we wanted to learn more. And, you know, we might have, like, fancy mixing glasses and gold-plated bar tools and all that stupid shit. But, you know, if we go on a camping trip, you and I are still going to be able to make a cocktail.
Yeah, you're doggone right. Yeah, we'll take some snake venom and, I don't know, a little stream water. No, dilute it. No, you didn't dilute it.
Shake it with some tree bark chips.
So squeeze some agave from a cactus, some sap or something.
And we can make it happen.
Yeah, totally.
Especially if Nick Strangeway is there with us to forage for us and find ingredients.
No, those are poisonous. Those are good.
Oh, okay. The stripe was going a different way. I almost did that.
No, not the five ways. Four. Yes.
Jesus, it's already been 30 minutes. So I guess the moral of today's show was don't be a dick.
Yes, don't be a dick. Or most of the time, yeah.
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 Don't get caught being a dick.
Yeah, I guess that's a good one. Yeah. Charles, I can't wait to have you on again sometime. We're out of time for today, but it's been a real pleasure having you in the studio finally.
Yeah, me too, man. I loved it. It was a good chance to catch up and just share some stories.
Absolutely, man.
Psyched.
Awesome. All right. Well, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. I guess we'll be seeing people this weekend at the Manhattan Cocktail Classic. We may not see you, but you'll see us. All right, we'll check in next week. That's it. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.